Okay, House Judiciary is called to order. It's 2 o'clock. Session ran over a bit late, and I allowed members to grab lunch. We're still kind of finishing lunch off and trying to get rolling here today, so our apologies for being a bit more informal and a bit late. Nonetheless, we do have a quorum to conduct business consisting of Representative Gruenberg, Anderson, Coghill, and myself, McGuire. We have 3 items scheduled on the agenda today. I'm going to make it clear that House Bill 131 we will not get to today. There's just simply not enough time. So for those of you who are here for that, you just had a schedule change. So I hope that helps you. And sorry, but there's a lot of testimony on these other 2 bills. So without further ado, we will bring up House Bill number 124, Collection of DNA, by Representative Anderson, and I'll go through the folks that are here, but first to the bill's sponsor.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Last year, members may recall that we passed out, and with your support, I think all co-sponsored House Bill 49, which was the DNA expansion bill, working with the Federal Bureau of Investigations and the CODIS database, where we collect, law enforcement collects DNA samples. We expanded that so that DNA samples would be taken, real simple process, with a Q-tip, swab of the saliva from, sorry, you're eating. that would be from, we expand to all felons and folks who have committed a felony crime against a person and sexual misdemeanors. We, through the help of actually the chair and Representative Gruenberg, we expanded that for exoneration purposes and for identification purposes, and there are some really illustrative and significant examples this summer. One in particular, I won't go into detail on the record, but body parts found in it, resultingly it assisted through our expansion of this DNA use. 2 gaps occurred, though, one of which was the fact that there wasn't a parallel addition in the statute to misdemeanors. I don't have the notes in front of me, but the felony in a municipality, and I think Annie Carpinetti can speak to that, where, and I think it might be 4th-degree assault, but she can clarify that, falls through that hole, and DNA's extraction doesn't occur. And so we want to make that parallel for municipal DNA samples as well. Secondly, and more importantly, to be blunt, there are individuals in prison who are in for life and who say, you know what, you can give me a felony all day long, 100 felonies, I'm in for life, and I don't plan on allowing you to take my DNA sample. And there is really no incentive for them to give. There is an incentive for us as a matter of public safety and solving of crimes. And I can name some serial killers who have rejected already taking a sample or providing a sample. And so I think they shouldn't have that right to do that. As a result, that's the primary reason I sponsored the bill, Madam Chair. There are 11 other states that do allow for reasonable force and immunity from liability in collecting a DNA sample from an offender. The bill is fairly straightforward, and it does have a finance, which I'm not sure why, because it has 4-0 fiscal notes, but it has a finance referral after this committee. So I would urge your passage of it. I can't answer questions, but I would rather defer to Mr. Boeheim from the Crime Lab or Annie Carpinetti for legal questions if you have something Representative Gruenberg mentioned about the constitutionality and others.
Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, Ms. Carpinetti.
Yes, she's next on the list. Annie Carpinetti, and then after that, Portia Parker, and then Chris Boeheim from the Alaska State Crime Lab. Those are the 3 I have. Welcome, Ms. Carpinetti. Saw your husband earlier today in the gallery, so.
How'd he look?
He looked fine. State of the Judiciary, so it's always good to see him. It's rare that we get to see our justices, so.
It's good.
Our bill.
I signed it to answer questions, but I will say that the Department of Law, my name is Annie Carpinetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. We do support this legislation, and I'd be happy to try and answer any questions that you have about it. I think Anderson gave a fine summary of it, and I guess just to let you know, I mean, we noticed after the bill passed last year that we had 4th-degree assault is prosecuted by municipalities throughout our state, by Anchorage, Juneau, and there, I'm sure there are others, I just don't have them at the tip of my fingers, and people who are convicted of that crime by the municipality are not required to provide a sample of their DNA to the bank, whereas people who were prosecuted by the state for similar conduct are, and it seemed a reasonable thing to close that loophole.
Further questions for Ms. Carbonet? Representative Pira has joined us.
Though I would note that it took gavel to gavel like 3 months last year to get sick of us and leave, but apparently we ended up a month this year. So congratulations.
Yeah. It's because it's my bill. They'll be in after we pass it out.
it's true.
I have two concerns about the bill, Ms. Carpinetti, and I'm wondering if you can help me figure out a way to make it better and deal with these concerns. Supportive of the concept, one is, it seems to me the great value of DNA evidence, but correct me if I'm wrong, is to solve crimes that involve blood, even sort of like sweat. You can you get somewhere with sweat? I mean, is it just blood that helps you, that somebody could leave behind at a crime scene that you could use DNA evidence for, or is it other things as well?
Through the chair, it is other things, but Chris Beheim is much better qualified to describe that to you. This allows us to use force to get a mouth swab, which basically I think is a Q-tip inside the mouth, and I think you have to get some cheek cells, but I'm not sure he could tell you for sure. I don't know whether saliva alone is adequate. And there are other, you know, you can get DNA from any part of the body, like bone samples. That they test for, you know, they find body parts and they get DNA.
I'll ask Chris. I was wondering what could be left behind at a crime scene that you could use DNA evidence to help you prove a case with. And
other than sexual crimes, there's, you know, right. Semen and stuff like that.
Okay. I guess I'm wondering why we wouldn't limit the bill to crimes against a person. And that's one question. And then the other question I have is, I'm a little troubled by this whole concept of the amount of force you can use to take a DNA sample from somebody. And I understand that if you have an unwilling felon, you're right now sort of at a standstill if you can't use any force. But the whole concept of reasonable force causes me a little bit of concern, too, of a forced taking. And tell me why it shouldn't.
Through the chair. Well, I think the sponsor used the term reasonable because it's a common enough term throughout our history. People are, comfortable applying a reasonable amount of force under the circumstances. If we were asking to take blood by force, I would feel it would be a lot easier to feel like you feel. But this is a mouth swab, basically. So a reasonable amount of force is the least amount of force, I would think, that would allow you to get a mouth swab. So I would just holding a person's arms and head, I would guess.
Can I continue with a couple? So, and I'll try and do this conversationally. That's the concern. It's the least amount of force you would need to do it, right? But you've got a defendant who, either because they're mentally ill or because they're a jerk, they refuse to open their mouth, right? And then you try and open their mouth, and you still can't do it. And maybe the only way to do it is to like sock them in the jaw, right? I mean, that is at some point, if they're really keeping their mouth closed, you've got to use something more than minimal force, right?
Through the chair, I think, and maybe Mr. Beheim can be more helpful to you, but I think as long as you have a person's immobilized, you should be able to get a swab of their cheek.
It's referred to as tickling, Representative Guerra.
Tickling. Wait, should we put that on the bill?
You want to tickle Robert Hansen?
I'm okay with tickling.
And as to your other question about other crimes, this committee really looked into that last year very cautiously, and Chris Beheim was here with his studies and his slides, and he's probably also better to tell you why, for example, forgery is, it's very important to get DNA samples from people who commit forgery because there's a correlation between that and other crimes. And I would be happy to go through my files because we have all that information, why it is important to have what crimes that you wouldn't think of, you would receive physical evidence, but you still have a correlation, and it is good to get their DNA in the bank for solving other crimes.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is probably directed at Mr. Boeheim, I guess.
Next up.
Just in case. Yeah, I guess I'll save it for him. So if he's the, he'll talk about how you open somebody's mouth, so I'll wait for him.
I would want you to get that from somebody else, too.
Thank you, Ms. Carpinetti. Okay, Chris, you followed the line of questioning. Representative Representative Grunberg. Chris, my apologies. Representative Grunberg still has a further question for Ms. Carpinetti.
Okay, I have a couple of questions here. If you would pull out your copy of AS 44-41035.
Yes.
Excuse me, here. I'd like you to look at subsection K, as in kilo, and the bill, lines 8 and 11 on page 1. It looks to me like we're really taking a step back, because the bill only allows the sample to be collected from a person convicted in this state. But subsection K says that the provisions of the entire section apply to a person from another state that this state has accepted under an interstate corrections or probation agreement of contact.
Through the chair, I had a conversation with Mr. Luckup, your lawyer who drafted the bill. Well, the legislature's lawyer who drafted the bill.
Right there.
Because I had a similar concern when I read in the state on page 1 of the bill, as it connected with subsection K. But as I read it, I read it several times this morning, and he doesn't think there's a problem. And I think I ended up agreeing with him that because the second part of subsection K says, if the person was convicted of an offense that is similar to an offense described in B of this section, I think that clarifies that when you're taking people in from, you know, on an interstate compact basis, you can take their DNA if the crime they are convicted of is similar to one of these.
I think I would agree. Let me continue, if I may.
Representative Roberg?
Looking at subsection, suppose you have somebody who's arrested. A person who's arrested, and under somewhat suspicious circumstances, and it turns out they are a serial killer, alleged, wanted in another state. However, you have a number of unsolved similar crimes in this state. If you were able to take DNA from that person, you might very well be able to connect him with the Alaska crimes before releasing him, before extraditing him. Is there an ability to do that, or may have been arrested under a totally different crime? It seems to me that you shouldn't have to worry about whether they're technically under an interstate corrections or probation agreement, but anybody who's legitimately arrested in the state.
Through the chair, well, the DNA identification system is based on conviction, people who are convicted. Now, in an investigation of a crime, if you have a person who's in the state and under the circumstances you described might be charged in other states with crimes, but who's here in the state and there's probable cause that he or she has committed a crime here, we might be able to get a search warrant to get DNA for that person, or the person under certain circumstances might even voluntarily give DNA. But it is true that the bank is based on conviction, people who are convicted.
If I may, Madam Chair. Are there constitutional problems with basically DNA sampling everybody, just like you fingerprint everybody?
Through the chair, well, I don't know that it's correct that we fingerprint everybody. We can't, I mean, people who are arrested can be fingerprinted.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
People who are arrested.
You know, the United States District Court in Anchorage just found that the DNA, that it held that we couldn't take DNA from a person who's on the sex offender registration list if they are completely disconnected from parole or probation.
They're not arrested. They're free to go. And I'm going to get to that if I may in a minute.
They're free to go, too. But, you know, they originally had a conviction.
Yeah, no, I'm
I think there might be constitutional problems, just as there would be for getting a fingerprint. You know, you have to have some connection between a crime and a person to, you know, get a fingerprint.
But I thought when a person is arrested and booked, they fingerprint them. Is there a problem with taking a DNA sample at the same time?
Through the chair, that's really an interesting question. Most states in our state has taken a different approach not to meet that issue head on. I think there's a really good argument that there isn't any difference, that DNA is like a much better fingerprint than your fingerprint.
That's my point.
Because of all the reasons, the concerns for privacy, that the state has taken a different approach, waited till the person is convicted of a crime before putting their evidence of DNA evidence into the bank.
We have a lot, and we heard a lot of testimony 2 years ago about the number of quote hits, which I think is a bad term, in this kind of a situation. It seems to me that if you can take somebody's fingerprint and it's not testimonial, why should you not be able to take a DNA swab? You'll match up number of people with crimes. And I don't know, I know you want to move the bill today, but that would be, I think, a major assist to law enforcement agencies.
Thanks, through the chair. When I first entertained the bill last year, 2 years ago, we heard from many different sources. Some folks said we wish you would do it at arrest, a conviction for any crime. For some said detainment. I mean, it went to somewhat ridiculous levels. Senators like Ogun last year, before he departed from the legislature, were worried about confidentiality, and so we made sure that if you abused the use of the DNA in the keeping, and Chris can speak to that, you would receive a felony for that misuse. There was also, and Chris I think will confirm that there is a difference between the DNA that you use, for instance, to determine if you might have a propensity for cancer versus the DNA for identification purposes. And he can kind of go through the detail of DNA collection. I agree with you, I always have, and I don't know if any state is that all-encompassing, but I wanted to do this in baby steps because of fears. Member of the committee wrote me a note and mentioned, you know, there's some concerns about how broad we can do this, and we heard that last year as well. Ultimately, the bill passed, but I would say baby steps dictate that maybe we keep it to this level now, not just for the passage, but because I don't know how much, debate there would be against that, and I fear that would offset the intent here, which is to get these people that are currently denying folks from extracting DNA from doing that, if that makes sense.
That's fine with me, through the chair. It's your bill, but I'd like to maybe suggest that either you or the committee, or if nobody wants to, I could put in a bill, suggest that in that order or the other order, whichever, that we consider such a bill, because I think we're at that point in time where this is well enough established. Modern fingerprint and a more accurate fingerprint.
Very, very good point. Yeah, I think Representative Anderson's right. We sort of arrived at a compromise point in the committee, and so we ended up with what we did, which is a little more expansive than some states, less expansive than other states. And so what we have right now, just to clarify on the record, is that it is crimes against a person and it's convictions.
Yes, for the bank and felonies.
That's
all
right.
All felonies in Title 11, felonies in Title 28, which is drunk driving, basically, felony drunk driving and refusal, and person crimes.
May I continue?
Representative Groomer.
Is arson in the first degree included?
Yes.
Yes. It's all felonies in Title I. Sorry. Thank you.
And secondly, let's talk about the Sedgwick decision, if we may.
Briefly. We're at 2:20 now. I did want to get to Chris Boeheim's testimony, too, even though it's interesting to flesh these ideas out regarding kind of more expansion. What I'd like to try to do is confine at least the testimony to the bill we have here now and concerns or amendments that people might want to offer to this bill, and then we could consider something else on a judiciary basis or something in the future. But so to the extent that, you know, your questions are about this bill or things you might want to change about this, that would be fine. I know Representative Guerra had his hand up, and I'd like to get to Chris Boeheim, and I'd at least like to get started on the Crimes Against Elderly bill today since we have folks here from the AARP.
Well, I would just like to know, apparently he struck down the Anderson Act 2003, you know, as far as it, people who were on the list but had served their time and actually completed probation. Is that a written decision?
Actually, it's not final yet. We don't have a final order yet. I can get you the latest. And it was actually a pretty narrow decision.
What did he hold?
He held, and I haven't read it carefully, so read it carefully, please. But it basically that to the extent that people who are on the sex offender registration list, to the extent that they are totally free from any conditions of probation or parole or any other conditions besides being on the sex offender registration list itself, you couldn't get their DNA.
As ex post facto.
It was pretty much a Fourth Amendment decision, as I recall.
But he didn't strike down the Anderson Act. It was that one small part.
It's just a small part.
I would appreciate if you could get me the ongoing copies of this.
That would be helpful.
There has been no final order yet, and we probably won't have one for a few months, maybe. But
yeah, it's a good.
We'll get you what we can.
The committee.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you so much, Annie. We appreciate it. Okay, and Chris Boeheim, you've been waiting patiently for us. You've heard kind of the dialogue here. We would love to. I know Representative Guerra wanted to know if you could incorporate in your testimony sort of how this DNA is collected, or Portia could do that too. That would be helpful.
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, I'm not an expert in the collection of DNA from individuals who are refusing, so I'm sorry, I can't help with that aspect of things. I can tell you that our database is extremely successful. Since the beginning, we've had 71 investigations aided, which is quite amazing because we actually are ahead of 17 other states, even though we have one of the smallest populations. The ability to get DNA samples from individuals who are refusing does have the potential of solving crime. Law enforcement has told me that there are people in custody that have refused to provide, that probably have committed other crimes that we have in the database. We've got over 200 unsolved crimes presently, just waiting for the offender to match up to, and then we can aid in an investigation. So I think that's pretty significant. And I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions that you might have regards to the database and its operation.
Okay. Representative Guerra? He may not know. We'll have Portia come up, too. I forgot, from Department of Corrections. Representative Coghill.
Just keying off what Representative Anderson said, could you give us some idea of the different types of DNA that you might collect and the value they would have in solving crimes?
Yes. Through the chair, we've gotten DNA on a whole variety of different objects. We've gotten it off of toothbrushes, blood, off the inside of latex gloves, saliva, bottle caps. We've even gotten DNA off of weapons used in commission of crimes, where we've swabbed the grips and the trigger and the hammer, and have been able to get full DNA profiles. These are able to be, you know, put into the database and then searched against other unsolved crimes and against the convicted offender samples. So it's been quite successful. We've linked up now 5 different unsolved burglaries showing that the same perpetrator was involved in each one of these cases. Now, at this point, we don't have the perpetrator matched up to anybody specifically, but we hope to as the database expands and get more offender profiles entered.
Representative Cockhill.
I'm sure, and I guess probably one of the questions I was fishing for is, what is the difference in value of, say, a swab DNA and a blood-borne DNA? If, say, like, I know that sometimes we're asking for a blood sample, and this has been indicated at least it would be probably a swab. Is there different values in those two?
No, generally not. Unless there's something very unusual, like a bone marrow transplant, the DNA in the buccal sample would be identical to the DNA in the blood. So either one would suffice as a known reference standard.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks. And just for the record, Chris, this is Tom Anderson. If someone wanted to misuse the DNA, the argument was in the Senate version. The question came up yesterday, what if someone tried to, again, sell it to an insurance company, the DNA sample, or tried to extract information to show condition potential for, you know, an offspring or whatever, cancer. It's a kind of a convoluted hypothetical. But isn't it, and I think that's where Representative Conco was going, isn't it a different DNA strand or sample that you keep for identification purposes?
Well, Representative Anderson, through the chair, the DNA markers that we utilize are strictly for law enforcement identification purposes. They have absolutely no value in determining the propensity of a person to get a certain disease or anything else about them. They're strictly used for law enforcement identification purposes. And in your bill, which was, you know, HB 49, increased the penalty to make it a felony for misusing DNA information. So it's quite, I think it's, we have a very strong protection against the abuse of DNA that has been collected for the database.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Boeheim. Portia Parker, Department of Corrections. Representative Guerra.
Mr. Boeheim, apart from the unusual circumstance then involving somebody who's had a marrow transplant or something like that, the cotton swab is enough to get the DNA evidence that you need? Is that right?
Are you losing?
Sorry.
Chris,
was this question for me?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry. The buccal samples are what we normally collected for the DNA database.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Representative Groenberg?
I have kind of an unusual request.
Okay.
We're moving rapidly on this bill, which I certainly support. But I have been given by somebody else who shall remain nameless a list of very important questions here that go to a variety of these witnesses. What I'd like permission to do, with your permission, to be redundant, is to submit these questions to these witnesses in writing, because some go to one, some go to another, and ask that and I'll distribute copies of the questions, that the questions and the answers be sent back to this committee for distribution. That way we can move the bill, but we'll get the answer to these questions. But I can't figure out offhand which go to you and which go to somebody else. Can I do that?
Absolutely. Be great.
I'm happy to distribute the questions so you can see what they are.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Portia Parker with the Department of Corrections. First, we do support this legislation and appreciate the sponsor introducing House Bill 124. The first, we don't have any concern, of course, on the first section. That is makes complete sense, and support that. The section two, I'd just like to state that as a general rule, we don't have that big of a problem or difficulty collecting DNA. Most offenders are very compliant, particularly those on probation parole. Overall, it's gone very well. And we do use the kits provided to us by the Alaska State Troopers, by the Department of Public Safety. We've worked very closely with them on developing policies and procedures, how to handle, you know, where we send them, how to get them to the Department of Public Safety for processing. And it's been implemented statewide with all the same policies, procedures, rules for collection. And we spent a lot of time last year making sure that we implemented that and trained people on how to do that, our employees how to do that. We do have a couple problem inmates who do refuse to give the oral swab. And that's the only way we collect, is with the little oral swab on the cheek. It's takes, you know, 2 seconds. It's very quick and easy, and most are compliant. But for those inmates who refuse to give it, we don't really have a mechanism in place to be able to force them to do that. Because the threat, of course, is further legal action. And for those serving life sentences or longer, there's no incentive. They don't care about further legal action. So, you know, there are several ways to do it. I think that even just knowing that they have to comply with the law, either the hard way or the easy way, they're going to be compliant. I think it's simply they don't have any incentive to do it, and they don't feel like they have to, and there really isn't anything we can do about it except to go and try to get them prosecuted on whether it's a misdemeanor or felony. I don't think that would matter. So for those very few cases, I do think that Section 2 of the legislation would be helpful and would be used very rarely.
Representative Garrett.
I don't think I have any questions. I've got committee discussion, I suppose, but I don't have any questions.
Questions? Representative Groomberg.
This was something I thought from Ms. Parker, but I think there's a technical amendment that needs to be made to the bill, and I don't know if it can be done by the bill drafter, or we can just do it as a one-word CS.
Any further questions for Ms. Parker? Okay, thank you. And before we get back to discussion on the bill, let me just be sure, is there anybody else in the room that wishes to testify in House Bill 124? There is, okay.
Is it necessary?
I don't know.
I don't have anybody else signed up or online, so if you're here, I'm going to state your name and affiliation for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tony Newman. I'm program officer with the Division of Juvenile Justice. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 124 regarding DNA collections. We've appreciated hearing from our partners in corrections and law on the need for this bill. At the Division of Juvenile Justice, we also collect DNA samples on youths who've been adjudicated according to the requirements in the statute. This function is performed by our juvenile probation officers. Those are the staff people who are responsible for processing the police reports that come in on juvenile crime and preparing reports on the juvenile for the court. I discussed this bill with a number of our staff, the juvenile probation officers who perform intake and the DNA collection functions could not think of a single instance where collecting a DNA sample was something that a youth did not agree to do. Talking with them about possible scenarios where a youth might resist turning in a DNA sample, they believe there's an existing statute regarding a non-compliance for DNA collection would serve as the fallback. So the need for reasonable force is not something they would ever see needing to rely upon. Bear in mind that in the juvenile system, different from the adult correctional system, kids aren't being incarcerated for decades and decades. And so the sort of scenario that Ms. Parker talked about, where someone has no reason to comply with the law because they're in jail for decades or for life, does not apply to juveniles. So, in short, we don't believe that this bill will have an effect on the management of juveniles. And I just wanted to thank you for your time, and if there are any questions for me.
Questions? Representative Guerra?
Thank you. Can you just reference that there's another statute or a backup if the reasonable force law were not passed, if there's some other way to get DNA from somebody who's unwilling? Right.
There is a statute, AS 1156-760, violating a DNA testing requirement.
What does that provide?
What does that provide? Maybe I should read it, huh?
Yeah, I don't have the details on the statute in front of me at the moment,
what
but it's...
What was the site on that again?
1156-760.
Violating an order to submit to DNA testing. Person commits the crime of violating an order to submit to DNA testing if...
That's a crime. Okay.
Mm-hmm. There has to be a court order for that.
Violating an order to submit to DNA testing is a Class C felony. They've been ordered to submit it as part of a sentence imposed. They've been convicted of an offense that requires DNA testing. They're required to register as a sex offender or a child kidnapper, and so on. So, okay, any further questions? Okay, hearing none, thank you. Anybody online that I don't have wishes to testify?
Yes.
Okay, can you just state your name and who you're with for the record?
I can't
hear you. If you put the handset to your mouth and take it off speakerphone, we'll probably be able to hear you.
I don't have a handset. It's just the thing sitting on a table.
Okay. Try to just talk as close to it as you can. Please.
Yeah, I'm right up on it. Can you hear me any better?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'll just punch over here. Then.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm not affiliated with anybody. I'm just a citizen.
Okay.
In fact, that's a lot of my concerns on this go to the fact that I think maybe they're doing too much already as far as the applicability to a whole bunch of crimes, not necessarily, you know, the notorious murders and things like that. Seems like a lot of people would be eligible for this sort of treatment. And I thought Representative Pera had some good concern about what reasonable is. And see here, looking at my notes, the idea that reasonable might be just historically what people have been doing, or whether people feel comfortable. I assume that would be the people who are doing the procedure rather than the people who are the procedures being done to, whether they felt comfortable. That maybe it's the least forceful, whatever that is. Maybe it's just enough to immobilize the person. And then there was a little suggestion, maybe just tickling them would work. And, you know, why not say what reasonable is in the law? There's a lot of places where we have reasonable force, reasonable suspicion, reasonable this, reasonable that. And I don't know that I necessarily buy the idea that, for example, suspicion is an act of reason, or that force is an act of reason. It seems to me that there's a fundamental contradiction there, and that just because some people can find a way to parse words to put that together into a kind of a reason why it's okay for people to do whatever they want to anyway under the color of law, I'm not sure that the public is well served by this type of a rationalizing process. So I would encourage you to be cautious in observing, for example, the Constitution. And I think I heard some discussion earlier about that, maybe indirectly, on whether there was testimony involved. But the language, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be put twice in jeopardy of life or limb, not quite so relevant. But nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself. I wonder how you could say that being forced to, you know, provide a DNA sample would not be compelled to be a witness against himself or herself, I guess. So those are some of my concerns. On the speaker, and I guess that's most of my notes. I can conclude there, I think.
Thank you for your testimony. The only thing we didn't get was your name. I'm sorry. That was when you were cutting out.
Oh, sorry. Scott Trafford Calder, private citizen in Fairbanks.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Okay, you too. Representative Gruenberg.
I'm just to ask anybody, Madam Chair, Ms. Carpinetti, or anybody, and this may have been asked before, is reasonable force defined in any statute?
I can't find it myself.
Just decisional law. Okay.
Hey, anybody else? Okay, so public testimony is closed. It brings the bill back before us. Representative Gruenberg.
I'm just wondering whether it would be advisable in this bill or some other bill to define reasonable force in the statute.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I don't think it's necessary, and I think we have to give some latitude to our correction officers who have to deal with this, and reasonable has been a long-standing in terms of pain threshold and others, and I don't think it has to be measurably listed in the statute, but we can disagree.
I don't want
to hold up the bill on that. I mean, there's never a serial rapist says you unreasonably open my mouth because I
one thought that I did have was would you feel comfortable or have you had discussion on the idea of confining it to a mouth swab?
That's the route that I would want to take, Madam Chair.
Just clarify. Is there specific language in the bill that says that?
The only DNA sampling is through mouth swab.
Okay, I'm sorry, I don't see where that's defined.
Oral sample.
It does say that? Yeah, it does say that.
In line 4. Oh, pardon me, that reference is oral, but Vanessa's
good.
Right.
It's also in line 7 of page 1.
Representative Kira.
It's two concerns. One is it will be solved if we probably add a couple of words somewhere to deal with the oral sample language, so we're really talking about the swab test. I can't do this in less than two sentences, so I'm just going to go on for a little bit. I know of cases that have been related to me that where I trusted the source, where I felt in the odd case there has been a corrections official who has physically abused a prisoner. I don't think it happens very often. I think it almost never happens. But there are times when bad apples slip through the system. And when you get people, where you hire people in positions of authority where they abuse that authority. And so I just want to make sure the bill that we pass doesn't contain any loophole that somebody who wants to act improperly with a state badge would be allowed to do that. So since we're talking about swabs, an oral swab sample, I think, is probably how it should read. You know, you could orally take a blood sample from somebody, I suppose, if you really were out to get somebody. So I would like it to say oral swab sample, since the testimony seems to be that's what we're talking about. And I'm not so concerned about the reasonable force issue. And certainly reasonable force is something the courts will say could involve some pain. So, I mean, you should know that. There is case law discussing reasonable force. A stun gun can be reasonable force at times. You know, a headlock maneuver can be reasonable force at times. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on how much the prisoner is resisting. So it's not going to all be gentle. And I have less of a problem with doing that to somebody who's committed a crime against a person. I have more of a problem of doing that to somebody who's been convicted of a less serious crime. So I think all of my concerns would be satisfied if we use the term swab where we say oral sample, and probably require the legislative drafter to get involved if we weren't comfortable with just using the word swab. And then my other concerns will be satisfied if we limit it to crimes against people, because I think the sponsor and I, coming into this hearing, thought that that's what this bill applied to. The most egregious case is crimes against people. Though I've noticed that it applies to all felonies, so I guess the language seems to say that it applies to cases involving crimes against a person or a felony. So any felony, even though it could be a break-in, right?
Yeah, we went through that debate.
So on this reasonable force issue, I suppose I have less problem using force against somebody who's engaged in a crime against a person than I do against somebody who's engaged in what I consider to be a serious but less serious crime. And really, the examples that anybody would come up with for why we need this law will involve cases involving crimes against people. I mean, those will be the murders and the arsons and the rapes and things like that that hurt people. So if we could limit it to those two things, swabs and crimes against people, I probably would have very few concerns about the bill and would be pretty supportive.
Representative
Anderson? Thanks, Madam Chair. I respect what the actually Representative really helped contour with Representative Grunberg and yourself, like I noted before Representative Garrett came to the meeting today, helped contour the last bill. I don't agree with his comment in terms of the idea that we have to construct this oral sample to say swab, and I think that that may be limiting, as in the future there are expansions of the scientific way to secure a DNA sample. Right now it's a swab. In the future it could be different, but I think the oral aspect to me appears to be, and from what what Chris and others have testified to, is pain-free. And so I don't think that's necessary, and I think it just adds time consumption to the bill on minutia that isn't necessary. But I respect his opinion on that. Secondly, with regard to he didn't mention reasonable force. I mean, that he wanted that to be changed, but he mentioned, Representative Guerra mentioned that he wants felony against a person only. And Mr. Boeheim and others have talked about in the bill last year the extrapolation when you look at crimes, white-collar crimes, embezzlement, things that you would think are harmless by their very nature, but he extrapolated out sequences where they found in Virginia particularly where DNA came, was first adopted into the statute and codified to be extracted and used for identification purposes. Virginia showed examples in the double digits of folks who did apparently, you know, harmless crime, forgery, embezzlement, and then they noted, I'm not talking everybody did this, I'm talking out of tens of thousands, I don't remember the number, but again, in the double digits where they were able to link that embezzlement through the DNA to a more egregious or heinous crime. And so I wouldn't want even one to slip through, and I think this inclusion, commensurate with the bill last year, fits, and that we don't want to say, okay, back in the last legislature, we had House Bill 49, where if you have a crime against a person or a sexual misdemeanor or any felony, you have to give a DNA sample. But in this bill, by the way, if you decide not to give your sample, we'll just limit it to the crime against a person, and the other felonies that are included in the bill won't have to submit to that if they don't want to. I think we have to be parallel with the legislation last year just to be consistent. So I would say, regarding the oral sample, in my opinion as the sponsor, I'm no expert, but that seems sufficient. And just personally, I would not be happy if we took the felony under AS 11 or AS 28.35 out, because I want it to be expansive, similar to last year's legislation.
Further discussion?
On to the points, Madam Chair.
Representative Garrett?
I don't think I made my point very well. So I'm going to try again. What I'm concerned really is about the rogue prison guard. What I'm concerned about is about the rogue parole officer who wants to extract their own personal justice against a defendant, who might have every reason to despise what the defendant did and who might want to extract a little bit of personal justice on that person. And it happens. And so, number one, if you just say oral sample, that can be an oral blood sample. You know, I know it's not intended, but it could be. And you're giving the authority to the rogue corrections officer to take blood with a needle to extract a little bit of pain when you're not intending to do that. So it should probably say oral swab sample or some other method if necessary. So that would cover everybody's concerns. Maybe there's some other procedure that'll be necessary someday, and that's okay. So you could say oral swab sample or some other method if necessary, and I think that would solve that problem. But our intention, all of our intention, is that they keep doing what they're doing right now as long as it works. If they need to do something else, then we should give them the latitude to do that.
And just to that point, I think the promulgation of regulations, and as chairman of administrative review, and the chairwoman was once the chair of that committee, I think that there can be interpretation, and Ms. Parker and others can identify that. And I don't think we need to have it codified as much as the purview of corrections. But I know what you're getting at. Someone pops someone in the face because they're a rogue corrections officer and says, I'll take the sample that way. I mean, you can always bring up hypotheticals like that, and I think that they might still try to do that, even if we change the statute. But I recognize and respect your concern of that, but I think that Department of Corrections can establish regulations and keep that refined so prisoners aren't hurt.
Just to complete.
Representative Guerra, and wrap up.
If we have an intention, we should say it in the bill. We shouldn't ask somebody else to adopt a regulation, so I disagree with that. The other part is limiting it to crimes against persons. You know, frankly, I think most of us coming into this bill hearing today thought this bill just applied to crimes against persons. The reason I want to limit it to crimes against persons is those are the most egregious crimes. Other crimes are egregious, but these are the most egregious ones. We're going to give the government the authority to put people in pain. Reasonable force will be interpreted to mean you can put somebody in pain. If they keep resisting, you can put them in as much, you can use as much force as you need to get done what you need to get done. That's what the case law says. So the more you resist, the more you can force. You resist even more, you can force even more. That's reasonable because the person keeps resisting. I just don't want to get in this sort of unsavory sort of house of pain circumstance. Unless we really have to, and I suppose, and I have very little sympathy for people who engage against in crimes that harm people physically. So that's why I want to limit it. That's why I'm okay with using the term reasonable force, which we shall acknowledge will be force that can cause pain. But let's just do it in cases involving crimes against people.
All right. So we've explored that. Is there further discussion or amendments that people want to offer to vote on before this bill goes on to finance?
I raised something, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
A little different. And I think maybe just a grammatical thing that runs out. On page 2, line 19, to insert before the word collection the word the, and I don't think we have to do a CS for that, but I think technically that should be there.
And Madam Chair, I'm not against that. I don't think it's necessary, but if I'll leave
if we
that
can just
up
bring
to you.
That to the attention of the legal counsel as their or the revisers. Yep.
Thank you for your insight.
Maybe just a note from committee staff.
Oh, yes. Okay, further discussion on House Bill number 124. Good discussion on the record. Representative Guerra.
I'll have two amendments when we're ready for that.
Okay, we're ready right now.
Great. I'm going to do these conceptually. Amendment number one would limit Section 2, the provision dealing with reasonable force, to cases involving crimes against persons.
Okay.
Not object for the reasons I stated.
Objection. Is there any further discussion from the committee on it that hasn't been had? Representative Coghill.
I respect the idea that the crimes against persons are sometimes much more egregious, but it's also true that taking their livelihood where it doesn't affect their person in such a way, I think, needs to be held with that same degree. And I think that's one of the reasons why we ratchet those things up to felonious issues. So I would just object.
Further discussion? Okay, Madam Secretary, will you call the roll on amendment number one?
Representative McGuire.
No.
Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Cott is not present. Representative Dahlstrom is not present. Representative Gruenberg.
No.
I'm sorry, I skipped Representative Anderson.
No.
Okay. Representative Guerra.
Yes.
So amendment number one fails to carry. Amendment number two, Representative Guerra.
Amendment number two will also be conceptual. In section two, where we discuss oral sample, I would propose that it say oral swab sample, comma, unless another method is necessary, comma.
Okay. I won't object to that.
You will or won't?
I won't. I guess I need some guidance.
Just a technical question on that. If we're going to do that, do we need to do that elsewhere in the bill and maybe in the statute? Because they talk like on page 2, lines 6 and 7, oral or tissue samples. And then they
Representative Garrett, well, I'll object just because I think it's not fully thought out. I see your point. I think we've made it clear on the legislative record, which we all know isn't always referred to. That being said, between now and Finance Committee, obviously you're free to keep your amendment, but I would encourage you to look into some specific language from legislative legal. Representative Guerra.
It does work.
Okay.
In the other places, you're talking about voluntary DNA samples. You can do that with blood if people are if people want to let you do it voluntarily. You can do it with tissue samples if people want to let you do it voluntarily. So in the other parts of the bill, they talk about all the different ways you can get DNA samples. That's fine. We're talking about forced DNA samples. When we're talking about forced DNA samples, since all the testimony indicates you can do it by swab, I'd like to limit the forced samples to samples by swab. And to give the law enforcement the ability to use some other method if they need to. So that's why I believe it does make sense.
Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, I appreciate your thought there to object, and I concur. I was looking at the legislative research report. They just gave a synopsis, not a full analysis of it. But from the 11 states that I'm gleaning here that require reasonable force to extract the DNA, I don't see, and I don't think any of them target explicitly a swab. And so I would say I agree that we should probably reject this and do a little bit more research to that end. I understand your thought, though.
Further debate on amendment number 2. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll on amendment number 2, please?
Representative McGuire.
Respectfully, no.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Koch is not present. Representative Dahlstrom is not present. Representative Bloomberg.
Yes.
Representative Garrett.
Yes.
2 yes, 3 yes.
So amendment number 2 fails to carry for now. That brings the bill back before us. Is there a motion? Representative Coghill.
Madam Chair, I move that we have House Bill 124 moved to the committee with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection to the movement of this bill out of this committee? Okay, hearing none, House Bill number 124 moves on with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes. Okay, next is House Bill number 132. I understand Representative Coghill has another commitment, and so you're excused. What I'd like to do is at least start the testimony on the bill. If I could just get that into the record. I'm allowed to take testimony. Is that a quorum, aren't I? Yeah. Okay. So without further ado, staff to Representative Stoltz. Do you want to just state your name for the record?
For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Bill Stoltz. I'm going to keep this really short because I do have people in the audience that need to testify, and they have been gracious enough to wait a full hour already. Our elderly population is growing rapidly in Alaska, and oftentimes they are targets of crime. The physical, emotional, and financial impacts of these crimes are more devastating than they would be on a normal person. What House Bill 132 will do will increase the penalty up one level for certain crimes that are listed in the bill to try to deter the targeting of our elderly population. Are there any questions?
Why don't we just hear from the folks that have been waiting? If you could stand by, we'd appreciate it. Okay, Marie Darlin from AARP. Welcome and thanks for your patience.
My name is Marie Darlin, for the record, and I am representing AARP. And you have a letter from our state office already in support of this legislation. referring again to the fact that these kinds of crimes against the elderly really are much more harmful, let's say, in many ways, than what it might be to somebody else, and that with the increase in the elderly population, too, we do want to make sure that our elderly are protected, and this is one more way of trying to make sure that those crimes against them are looked at as serious as they really are. And so we just support the legislation as it's presented. And I don't know if you have any questions or not, but we're just here to say that we support it.
Thank you. And was this something that AARP had looked at and approached the governor on?
I'm not sure just where it all came from, but I do want to say, and this would
Pardon
be
me, Representative Stoltz on.
Yes, all right.
Slip.
In connection with the other bill, which is, you know, follows this, that AARP is really very interested in the fact that seniors are now being targeted more and more for all the identity theft and those kinds of things. In fact, AARP has started a nationwide education of the public, particularly the baby boomers, if you want to say so, and the elderly, against all the kinds of scams and ID theft and everything else that goes along with this issue, and to try and educate our elderly population to be aware of these kinds of things and beware. And so this is just one more way of helping take care of the fact that people will realize that this maybe is no longer a misdemeanor. If you do something like that, that it can have other repercussions. And so we just want, you know, you to know that we'll be supporting the other bill too, because it goes right along with the kinds of things that we're working on right now.
Representative Anderson?
Just a quick one. I sure appreciate your advocacy, and you've always been so great with testimony in Labor and Commerce as well, which I chair. But I guess it rubs me wrong. I certainly support the bill, but I look at my parents who are 66 each, and my dad who, you know, does the race to Nome. He didn't do it this year, and he probably would jump up and say, elderly, you know, wait a minute.
I know.
I mean, is that just vernacular that we use? And 65 is kind of the protocol, the typical age nationwide?
More or less, yes, and yet we know that not everybody, you know, is going to be at the same stage of their life, let's say, at age 65 or even 75, sure. And maybe more so in Alaska than other places, but nevertheless, we so far support the bill, you know, really, the idea that it should be helpful.
Sure. Further questions for Ms. Darling? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, next I have Sam Trevette or Trevetti. I can clarify for the record. Trevette.
For the record, my name is Sam Trevette.
Trevette.
I'm here also on behalf of ARP. I'm also the president of the Retired Public Employees, so I've testified before you on that, and I also worked in corrections for 30-some years, so I know your father quite well, and
great.
Yes, I understand his concern. I'm not quite there, but pretty close in it. Talking about elderly, it doesn't fit, I don't think, for some of us, but Representative Stoltz, I think, cut that off, use that date probably because that's when Social Security normally kicks in for older folks, and it's commonly used throughout the country. Just let me say that ARP is doing a lot of work on educating older folks on these issues, and there's not an education component in here, but I think that's very, very important. I think many of the people that were at ARP's recent training here in Juneau were unaware of some of the kinds of techniques that some of these crooks are using to try to get into their bank accounts and using their credit cards. Just very briefly, I've worked in corrections for 32 years myself here in Alaska. I've dealt with lots of crime victims, of course, over the years, and there's no doubt that the impact upon crime victims is severe, and I think especially for low-income folks that are on fixed incomes, that's especially the case. There's also a practicality issue, again, having worked with law enforcement and being involved with Alaska Peace Officers Association for many years. There's no question that when you raise the crime to a felony level, that it gets more attention. That's one of the issues we have right now, especially with a lot of these crimes are being committed, and a lot of the crimes, of course, start in a different state, possibly sometimes, and you try to get another state sheriff or local police department to deal with the case. And if you're talking about a felony, they're willing to give you a lot more of their time than if you're talking about a misdemeanor. So that there's some practicality about that. And for those reasons, I think that the bill makes sense, and I'm glad that Representative Stoltz brought it forward. And again, ARP does support it, and that's some of the practicalities that might help you in your deliberations. And, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Okay, Chairman. Okay, Sam, I'll co-sponsor it.
Other questions for Mr. Trudeau? Okay, thank you. Okay, next I have Linda Gohl from the Alaska Commission on Aging.
Hi, I'm Linda Gohl with the Alaska Commission on Aging, and on behalf of the commission members, I'm here to speak on behalf of in support of this legislation. I think Marie and Sam both addressed the issues pretty clearly, that this would be try to discourage additional crimes against the elderly, but it makes me think that perhaps if this bill were to pass and also make it through the Finance Committee, that we would need to do some marketing to let folks know that this bill, that this law has been changed, and maybe also do a little bit of, the commission could do some work to get the word out, so to also let youth know that just to change a public perception of the elderly, and also for Representative Anderson's question earlier about terminology, the Older Americans Act refers to folks who are old or seniors. They mostly refer to folks as older Americans, so often in our documents for the state we use the term older Alaskans. And then depending upon what part of Alaska you're in rural areas of Alaska, we refer to elders, which is more politically correct for our rural and village and native population. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for Ms. Cole? Okay, then I have Randy Rural, Department of Law. And after Annie Carpinetti, I don't have anyone else, so if you're out there, I'll ask for you. But my apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, and just wanted to put the department's support for the bill on record. And try to answer any questions if I can.
Representative Gere and then Gruenberg.
I also think the bill is a good idea. I think there are a couple sections that maybe are a little bit overbroad, so I just want to ask you about a couple of them.
Annie, if you wanted to come up too and be here at the same time, it's fine with me as well. Okay.
Just so people know, this bill makes a whole series, a list of, I don't know, somewhere over a dozen crimes more serious if they're committed against an elderly person, and I think that's especially important when it involves crimes involving fraud, crimes involving injury, things like that. But sometimes when you wrap in a whole bunch of other statutes at the same time, you have some unintended consequences. And I'm looking at page 2, line 24. We're making it a felony, I believe, to, let me just take a look. If you look at one of the crimes that we're now going to make a felony would be something that intentionally causes damage to property of another, if the property is worth $500 or more. So that could be, I believe, taking a key to a parking, a key to a car in the parking lot. If the paint job costs $500 to repair, we're now turning that into a felony. And am I right about that?
Would that be right? Through the chair, Representative era. There is a few steps in between, I think, in the mechanics of it. The first step is that the person would have to be found liable or guilty for committing that particular crime, and then the second step would be that it would have to be proven that they recklessly disregarded the fact that that property belonged to someone age 65 or older, because the bill only rolls up the penalties. It's not a strict liability offense, I guess. If the person owning the property happens to be 65, that's not enough. You still have to prove that the actor committing the offense recklessly disregarded the fact that the property was owned by someone over 65. And I know that doesn't appear in the bill, that the word reckless doesn't, but if you look at 1181.610b2, it provides that when no mental state is mentioned in the bill, the reckless state is inferred for a circumstance, and the circumstance in this case is that the property is owned by someone over 65 or older. So I know that's a little, sorry I got long-winded. I had to look it up myself, but that's how I understand the mechanics of it to work, I guess.
With all due respect, I look at the bill, and this is a sentencing provision, and it says 1255.136, right? It relates to penalties, and it says if the crime is against somebody who's 65 years or older, then we heighten the penalty. I don't think that that's an element that you have to prove at trial. I don't think you would have to prove that you knew the person was 65 years old. I don't think that's correct.
Through the vice chair, I guess that's not my understanding of the bill. And the way I read it was that the 1181.610b2, that the requirement that it be the reckless requirement that you show a reckless disregard for the age of the person against who you're committing the offense would have to be proven in order for the penalty provisions to apply. And again, I apologize. I got long-winded on my explanation, but.
Okay, I guess I don't agree. 1181 isn't what's being changed. It's the sentencing. It's the sentence that's being changed, and that's 1255. And the bill as it reads says the sentence essentially shall be increased if the victim was 65 years or older. It doesn't. That's not an element of the crime. That's what happens after you're convicted. It's the penalty that's being changed by this bill. So I don't think that that the bill has anything to do with the elements of the underlying crime.
I guess through the chair, that's a possible reading of it, but the intent, I can speak to the intent of the bill was to not have it apply, I guess in a sense, as a strict liability. In other words, any offense that occurs and you find out later it happened to be owned by someone over 65 or older, then the penalty is enhanced. I do, you know, the mechanics of the bill aren't intended to work like that. They're intended to, the penalty provisions are targeted at people who are committing offenses intentionally or recklessly towards people 65 or older. So I guess, you know, your reading's a possible reading, but the intent of the bill, as I understand it, is to require that additional element of proof of the reckless disregard for the person's age.
I was just talking with the legal counsel, too, and we're trying to balance which one it is, and I hear both arguments, too. I don't know. There's no judge to decide who's right on this, so we will.
Why don't we just guess? I mean, just
pass the bill out.
I have a question.
Yeah, Representative Groomer.
It seems to me if you're going to do this, Mr. Rohrer, that you have a Blakely issue. I see Ms. Carpinetti nodding and smiling. Maybe Ms. Carpinetti could...
Sure.
Ms. Carpinone?
I'll try.
Welcome back.
I think Mr. Ruaro has given you the best answer that we have, but as I was sitting there thinking about how I would answer, I was thinking you probably know more about this issue than I do at this point.
This is one of those ones that Lisa just says, who cares?
I know. You'd have to show that the person knew that the victim was 65. That would be another element of the crime.
Well, it would be. I think Mr. Ruaro is correct that it would be a circumstance that would be something that we would have to prove recklessness as to, rather than knowing. But
you don't card the victim.
Pardon?
You don't card the victim.
That's correct. I mean.
Excuse me, ma'am. While I rob you, would you show me your ID?
Well, now that I'm getting your ID, I'll check it and see.
Yeah, reckless.
But I would be happy to get back to you, since this is an issue that I don't know a lot about as much as the people in our office who have been working on
Mr. Chair, I mean, in all seriousness, I might appear to be 25 to some person who's visually impaired, but, you know, you can't always tell how old somebody is. And
knowing is a difficult one.
Even reckless is difficult. I mean, particularly in Alaska winter, where they're bundled up, you can barely tell who the victim is, let alone their age.
Madam Chair, we've really made no progress. We're talking about looks and bundling and Representative Gruenberg. No, I'm teasing. Just to catch you up on that one part, we were debating.
Keep chairing, it's fine with me.
She leaves. Pass the gavel back to you, but
Where are we?
Well, I was saying that, first of all, I thought there might be a Blakely issue. Secondly, it seems to me that it's difficult for a perpetrator or anybody to be able to always tell the person's age. And then it's sort of the same kind of a thing as statutory rape, isn't it? My recollection is there's a case now, a statute that says a reasonable defense mistake as to age is a defense.
I believe that's correct. I think there is a statute that says, you know, under 13 or under 12, you don't get that defense, but I think that has been questioned.
How do they do this with elder abuse? The statute's dealing with elder abuse. Is there an age in there?
Through the chair, Representative Krause.
Oh, yeah, we have somebody in the audience.
We can't hear what you're saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Adult Protective Services statutes just discuss an adult is considered 18 older. They don't make a distinction between an older Alaskan and a
Don't we have statutes prohibiting elder abuse?
Yeah. Okay, Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I have to go chair Labor and Commerce. I don't want to expedite this on one hand, but on the other hand, I concur with the two presenters on their legal opinion and defer to them, but I respect what Representative Guerra is saying. If we were to have an amendment, as we did in my bill earlier, it would be defeated because it would be presumably 2-2. That being said, we could still move the bill out today. But if you are uncomfortable with that, we can wait till there's a full committee. I mean, I wanted to state because you can't pass the bill with only three people.
And the minority is kind enough to be establishing my quorum for me right now, which
That's
my
true.
Majority members aren't.
So do you have a
With that,
problem?
I'm going to go ahead and adjourn and hold this over to allow Representative Guerra to talk with Representative Stoltz, Department of Law, and work it out.
Thank you.